Welcome to this episode of our special podcast series, a collaboration between ASTCT Talks and Cancer Network. In each episode, we dive into the latest developments and challenges in the treatment of multiple myeloma, T-cell malignancies, and other pivotal topics in oncology, hematology, stem cell transplantation, and cellular therapy. Join us as we speak with leading experts, uncover new research insights, and tackle key issues facing healthcare professionals today.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is one of my favorite kinds of episodes. This is a jointly hosted podcast by ASTCT, an edition of ASTCT Talks, and also co-hosted by Cancer Network, Oncology on the Go, where we talk about all things relevant to CAR T therapy, cellular therapies, and more. I'm your host, Dr. Rahul Banerjee from the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center in Seattle. And today, it is my unique privilege and pleasure to speak with our panelist about a recent paper she had published in Blood. Our panelist today is Dr. Hitomi Hosoya. Dr. Hosoya is a physician scientist and a hematologist at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, where she's also an assistant professor of medicine. She specializes in cellular therapy, such as CAR T therapy, with an emphasis on multiple myeloma. Dr. Hosoya, Hitomi, if I may, pleasure to have you here today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Banerjee, for having me. Very happy to be here.
Perfect. And feel free to call me Rahul. I know we know each other, which makes this nice. Okay. It was really fun reading your paper in Blood that came out earlier this year in 2026, where you were the first author, entitled Long-Term Follow-Up of Gastrointestinal CAR T-Cell Lymphoma, Homing, Clonal Expansion, and Response to Cyclosporin. So our audience is, you know, a mix of everybody, but many of people listening right now are, you know, either physicians or providers in the CAR T or in the malignant hematology space. Can you, with that in mind, can you walk us through the premise of this paper, you know, and what were its key conclusions?
Sure, thank you. This is one of the most exciting projects that I worked when I was at Stanford, and I would like to give my huge thanks to my friend and colleague, Dr. Nicholas Bastidas-Torres, who is a co-first author of this article, an expert hematopathologist, Dr. Sebastian Fernandez-Paul, and an expert in T-cell lymphoma, Dr. Michael Cordes, as well as a hematologist and CAR T-cell therapy expert, Dr. Leika Michelineni. This case we study was a patient of Dr. Michelineni who experienced CAR T-cell derived lymphoma. But I wanted to step back and talk about secondary malignancies after CAR T-cell therapy. So second primary malignancy has been reported in about 3 to 6% of the patients across all the CAR T products. And this includes 1/3 of them having hematological malignancies, 1/3 developing solid cancers, and the rest is non-melanoma skin cancers and other cancers. Among the heme malignancies after CAR T-cell therapy, there's a subset of patients, very small number, but reported to have T-cell lymphoma after the CAR T-cell therapy. And this led to the FDA warning in 2023 about the T-cell lymphoma that was based on 22 case reports. And a subset of them were actually confirmed to have CAR T-cells within this T-cell lymphoma. So thought to have the T-cell lymphoma derived from CAR T-cells. And this is a huge issue because the CAR T-cells that we are giving as a treatment strategies are actually turning into cancer. So, you know, this has been kind of, you know, brought a lot of attention in our field. So this case that I walked through is he was 50 years old and, you know, he was fit, working full-time, gentleman, and, you know, he had myeloma for several years already, and he was refractory to 6 other lines of therapy. And so this CAR T-cell therapy, you know, he didn't not have a lot of options at that time. And so CAR T-cell therapy at the time was thought to be the most efficacious therapy. So he got this therapy as a 7th line of therapy. And he did really well right after the CAR T infusion. You know, the immediate toxicity we are worried about includes cytokine release syndrome or ICANS neurotoxicity. He only had a grade 1 cytokine release syndrome and no neurotoxicity in the first month. And so he did really well for this during the initial part, and he went back home, you know, living his life. But after about 2 months of the infusion, he started to develop diarrhea that was pretty bad. And so he went to the local hospital, and he was diagnosed with diverticulitis and prescribed with antibiotics. He took antibiotics, but the diarrhea not really improve. So he had to be hospitalized at the hospital a week later. So, and we are thinking that the diarrhea at that time was probably reaching, you know, probably like 2 to 3 liters or even more. And so they did the upper and lower endoscopy to investigate, but nothing was really revealing. So at that time, the thought was maybe the CAR T that was activated was causing a lot of inflammation in the body, and that was partly causing a lot of diarrhea. So Dr. Michael Nenni prescribed the dexamethasone, some steroid, to kind of calm the inflammation, but it did not really work that well. He had some initial improvement, but did the diarrhea go worse again? So then he tried some other agent. We tried a biologics called infliximab, which is used for inflammatory bowel disease. Because again, the thought was maybe the CAR T was activated and causing a lot of inflammation. And so infliximab was tried, which, you know, again, showed some initial improvement, but then the diarrhea got worse again. We tried another agent for inflammatory bowel disease called ustekinumab, which is an interleukin 12 and 23 inhibitor. Again, did not really work that well. Mm-hmm. And around this time, he had lost like 20% of his body weight. His diarrhea was consistently 4 to 6 liters. He was cachectic. You know, there was some electrical derangement. So he had to admit it to Stanford Hospital for another endoscopy and biopsy examination. And this was already like 4 months after the initial presentation of diarrhea, and this was kind of how much we took time to, you know, accurately diagnose. But the most recent biopsy did show a dense T-cell infiltration in the lamina propria of the small intestine. This was localized, interestingly, to only small intestine, and it was negative in the stomach or the large intestine. But our hematopathologist, Dr. Sebastian Fernando Paul, saw a lot of T cells within the small intestine. And so he did a further workup for that. Mm-hmm. He saw a lot of cytotoxic T cells that were mostly CD8 positive, and then some clonality marker was positive. And so at this time, he sent for T cell receptor sequencing to further test the clonality. And that was also showing the dominant clone with several other small clones. And he was diagnosed with the T-cell lymphoma at this
time. Understood.
Mm-hmm. And then, so then we asked whether these T-cells were CAR positive. And we studied that by running the flow cytometry. And these T-cells, the majority of them were indeed CAR T positive. They were either CD8 positive or double negative. But we wanted to see if these, you know, why these CAR T cells were proliferating a lot in the small intestine. So we did some genomic studies. We did whole genome sequencing, whole exome sequencing, as well as targeted panel sequencing, and saw that these CAR T cells that infiltrating into the small intestine had a mutation in gene called SH2B3. And when we brought up to Dr. Kurudas, you know, he was very familiar with this gene because it was reported in a lot of T-cell lymphoma cases. And it's involved in a signaling pathway called JAK-STAT pathway. And so our thought was maybe the SH2B3 mutation contributed to the lymphoma genesis. And so then our question was whether this mutation was present before CAR T manufacturing. So we sequenced his blood samples before the CAR T manufacturing and saw this mutation at very low level of 0.4%.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So our working, you know, our hypothesis then was maybe this patient had this mutation, SH2B3 mutation, and this T cell, unfortunate T cell that had CAR insertion, went to the small intestine and grew there. We next investigated whether the CAR insertion also contributed to the lymphoma genesis. And so we looked for where the CAR gene was integrated within these CAR T cells. We did a lot of sequencing and saw that this CAR T cells, CAR gene was integrated into a gene called TFCP2, which sounds very unfamiliar, but this gene is a cousin of TP53, which is a very well-known tumor suppressor gene. And when we look at the literature, there was some malignancies such as rhabdomyosarcoma that has TFCP2 rearrangement. And there's a specific entity called TFCP2 rearranged rhabdomyosarcoma that has particularly aggressive features. So our conclusion was these CAR T cells had SF2B3 mutation, and the CAR happened to be integrated into this TFCP2 gene that might contribute to the lymphopangenesis of these CAR T cells. So then we asked why this patient had the GI involvement of the CAR T cell lymphoma. And
correct. I always wanted the same thing. Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. So then we did the single cell transcriptomic study and saw that these CAR T cells were expressing integrin alpha 4 beta 7, which is a homing receptor, to the small intestine. And, I think it's just a case of, one case. And so we cannot really definitively say much about it. But there's some evidence that, these CAR T cells were expressing some homing receptor that, that might attract these CAR T cells into the small intestine. What was interesting about our case was that we saw not only one clone of the CAR T cells, but saw several clones within this CAR T cell lymphoma. When we think about lymphomagenesis in general, we picture that one of the lymphocytes within an organ or tissue has, accumulated genetic mutations or genomic population and become malignant cells and outgrow within the tissue. But what we saw was that there were several clones that went to the small intestine. And one of the CAR that had the SS2B3 mutation and TFCP2 CAR integration had a growth advantage and proliferated without a check. And so this was very interesting phenomena that we saw. We cannot really say if this CAR didn't have SS2B3 mutation or the TFCP2 integration. Maybe the presentation might have been different. But, I had several other patients who had diarrhea for just, a couple of weeks and just self-resolved. And so our impression is that this CAR somehow have some predilection of going to the GI tract and causing some diarrhea. And this particular case that we had unfortunate genomic changes and therefore causing a massive problem and it's eventually diagnosed with CAR T cell lymphoma.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. It's one of those things that I actually remember Dr. McElhinney talking about this case back in the early days of IEC enterocolitis, which, as we think of as more of a, not quite autoimmune, more of a polyclonal process we think of. And this kind of shows that case, she was like, oh, she thought was in this bucket, but it's only moved to this bucket. And it's one of those things that evolves over time. Maybe can I ask you a little bit more about the cyclosporin choice? You chose that as a medication, which, when I've talked to other T-cell lymphoma doctors back in the early days of this phenomenon of, oh, T-cell lymphoma is emerging after CAR T-cells, cyclosporin is not the drug that comes to mind, or we try to think of true T-cell lymphoma drugs, more alkylating, heavy, high-dose chemotherapy. Anything specifically about cyclosporin, or is it just that mainly these cells are more easily able to get shut off with a smaller dose of things?
Yeah, so as we didn't have any experience.
Correct. Yeah, no one did. Yeah.
Presented, right. So the first CAR T lymphoma case was presented as we were diagnosing him with CAR T cell lymphoma after cell setting. So, nobody in the country had any experience with how to manage this phenomena. And when we talk about T cell lymphoma, you're right that we initially think about, the intensive chemotherapy, sometimes the allogeneic stem cell transplant, or, if it's more indolent disease, then we talk about just some kind of milder medication.
Correct. To
suppress
the T cell. Or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So for his case, our hematopathologist diagnosed as a thought that it was fitting more to indolent type of T-cell lymphoma because the proliferation index, the Ki-67, was around 30%. It was localized only to the GI tract. And so it didn't have like aggressive features that they usually see. And so we thought that intensive chemo or allogeneic stem cell transplant were probably not needed for this case. And for the patient's perspective, he lost a bunch of weight, cachectic, and we were worried that he could not probably tolerate intensive chemo. So that was kind of off the table. And when we talk about more gentler therapy, we thought about JAK inhibitors such as ruxolitinib, but we were also worried about infection risk associated with it. And you know, the Dr. McElhenney asked a bunch of investigators across the country, and there was one case that she heard the cyclosporine worked for the patient's diarrhea. So, you know, we thought that that might be the reasonable option. It's probably doesn't have a lot of toxicity, so we can at least try and see if the diarrhea evolves. If it doesn't, then we can, you know, switch gears and try something else. But fortunately, this patient's diarrhea started to improve within a week, actually, of starting the cyclosporine, and completely resolved within 6 weeks of treatment. So that was, you know, the happy story in the end. Obviously, you know, we did not foresee that was happening.
Understood. No, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I'm sure that it will continue to evolve with time, but that's helpful. I guess it's not a typical T-cell lymphoma, as you said, nor is it typical anything. In each case, has to be individualized. So maybe to that end, I'll wrap up with a final question. You know, what's next for this? You can take that question as you will. You know, what's next for us, next for this area of toxicity and preventing it as a field in terms of better CAR T therapies? What's better? What's coming up in terms of diagnosing this or preventing it or identifying patients higher risk factor? You know, what's next for this kind of research now that you've published this amazing blood paper?
Yeah, I think that studying this rare toxicity, we need a huge teamwork. You know, within our institution, we ask help from obviously, you know, the T-cell lymphoma expert, and also, you know, we did a lot of lab investigation. And so now that, you know, Dr. McElhenney and, as you know, are leading this consortium, who, you know, which we are investigating further about this, you know, we call it IEC enterocolitis, the enterocolitis associated with CAR T-cell therapy, and try to understand if this is, you know, really, how many of them are fitting to lymphoproliferative disorder or it's just like autoimmune conditions. So we're trying to investigate that further. And I think this is really a huge team effort. And, you know, this is a nice way of understanding this rare toxicity. And in terms of, you know, how we can improve future therapy, I think it's hard at this point because we don't know the pathogenesis of it completely.
True.
But once we understand, then we can talk about how we can prevent this toxicity in the future.
Well stated. Yeah, that's a good point. You can't fix this if you don't know what's going on. It is interesting that, yeah, it does seem, if you look at this case and the case in New England Journal of Medicine, actually two or three, they do seem to be happening more with cilta-cel, but so hard to say whether it's just we've been using those patients or something about the tropism of that product or just bad luck. And we're using a lot of cilta-cel currently. So we'll see.
Right.
Great. Well, this is actually really cool. Normally not many of these talks go both into single cell sequencing and what to do with the patient in front of you. So this is helpful. Thank you again for your time, Dr. Hosoi. I really appreciate it, Hitomi. I'll talk to you soon. And for all you listening, thanks again for listening.
Thank you so much, Rahul.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode. We hope you found our discussions enlightening and relevant, offering you a deeper understanding of the present and future of cancer treatment and research. Make sure to join us again for more insightful episodes as we continue to bring you expert opinions and the latest developments from the forefront of oncology and hematology. Please subscribe and leave reviews wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. For additional resources and episodes, visit our websites at www.cancernetwork.com and www.astct.org.